Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
And welcome in to WEEI. This is going to be a combination Red Sox review, which is going to be miserable. But then we're also going to have a little Celtics-Knicks preview, which I think will be a lot more fun. I'm your host, John Lyons. I got Tom Crisafulli here producing with me. I mentioned Celtics preview. I'm going to do that in the next hour. Justin Turpin's going to join to help me do that. But we're going to start with Red Sox review for a little bit here. We are going to hear from the manager, Alex Cora, in just a few minutes after a tough 5-4 loss for the Boston Red Sox at the hands of the Minnesota Twins. A series loss as well. Today's loss, of course, comes on the heels of yesterday's 4-3 defeat. And this is a Red Sox team, 18-18. They've had a relatively easy schedule to this point. Like, this is not a good Twins team. They only have 15 wins. Two of them are against you this weekend. Relatively easy schedule, 18-18 overall, 9-8 at home. Another game today where the Red Sox have a 3-1 lead in the seventh inning, can't hang on. The bats go silent. Red Sox top four hitters, Duran, Devers, Bregman, Campbell, no hits combined. And for the Twins, I mean, they got four of their five runs with two outs. So credit to the Twins for not going away. But to me, this all comes down to the seventh and the eighth inning. I mean, you have a 3-1 lead. Garrett Whitlock's on the mound to start the seventh inning. He gets Harrison Bader down 0-2. Then he throws four straight balls and walks him. So Bader's on first. Vasquez singles. Both of them advanced on a Byron Buxton ground out. And then Ryan Jeffers comes up with two outs, two RBI single. Next thing you know, it's 3-3. And Whitlock, by the way, giving up multiple runs in his last two appearances. Of course, he gave up multiple runs in his last game against Toronto. He had not given up any runs in his previous six outings. So, bit of a rough stretch for him. So, Minnesota ties it at 3-3. Then you go to the top of the eighth. Sox go quietly in the bottom of the seventh. You go to the top of the eighth. Carlos Correa has a single. Harrison Bader doubles off the monster with two outs. Correa scores 4-3. Then Trevor Larnach with an RBI single. 5-3. Again, I mentioned, out of their five runs, four of them came with two outs. Red Sox had a solo homer from Willy Abreu in the bottom of the eighth to cut it to 5-4. They did get a two-out single from Sedan Rafaela in the bottom of the ninth, but that was about it. Jaron Duran struck out. As I mentioned, 5-4 win by the Minnesota Twins. This is the ninth time this year the Red Sox have lost a game by one run. It's the most in the major leagues. So this team is losing a lot of one-run games. They're losing just a lot of, and not just one-run games, but just close games in general. They're giving up leads in a lot of games. You heard Will Fleming talk about this on the post-game as well. I mean, this is a team that, to me, is far too talented to be 18-18. And again, especially, think about their schedule from the beginning of the season on. They've played a series against the Cardinals, which they played great that series, but they've played the Cardinals, they've played the White Sox, they've played the Blue Jays, they've played the Twins, all teams that are below 500 or in the Blue Jays, you know, been kind of hovering around 500 most of the year, and they've really struggled to clean up in those games. Like, they played really well against St. Louis, and they lose 2 out of 3 to the Twins. They haven't played that well against the White Sox, didn't play well against Toronto. Like, Toronto has 5 wins, I think, already against the Red Sox. So again, really frustrating loss today for the Boston Red Sox. I'm here to talk about it with you. 617-779-7937. Again, I'm starting Red Sox here on the program. I will get to Celtics and previewing their series against the Knicks later on. Maybe we'll sneak in a little bit of NFL talk. We'll see. But again, 617-779-7937. That is the phone line and the text line. This was a game that Garrett Crochet started. So again, you waste an outing by Garrett Crochet. Kind of a weird outing, too, from Crochet. I mean, go right to the first inning. So Byron Buxton homers on the very first pitch of the game. And by the way, Twins really aggressive today with Crochet. Crochet threw 13 pitches in the first inning, and the Twins swung at 10 of them. So they came out with a clear plan, and that continued that aggressiveness into the second, third, fourth, fifth innings as the game went on, but especially that first inning. 13 pitches, Twins swung at 10 of them. Crochet ended up throwing 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 6 Ks. The line doesn't look bad, but his velocity was a little lower than typically is. He kind of comebacker up the middle that glanced off his cheek and nose, which seemed to affect him a little bit, and understandably so. It's obviously a painful thing to have happen and an unexpected thing as well. But again, this is a game where Crochet, you felt maybe coming out that he could give you 6 or 7 innings. You were hoping to feel a little bit better about him today. And just, again, only 1 run, 6 Ks, so not a bad outing by any means, but maybe not quite as dominant, I think, as I was hoping, at least, maybe as a lot of you are hoping. But he only gives up the 1 run. Red Sox in the bottom of the second got a leadoff single from Willy Abreu. Romy Gonzalez had a single. Hamilton sack bunt, moved both runners over. And then Carlos Narvaez, a single, 2 RBIs, 2-1 Red Sox. Don't look now. Carlos Narvaez, I know he's only hitting 217, but actually it's 214 after today, excuse me. Only hitting 214, but tied for the major league lead in defensive run saves. So he's been really good defensively. He might be winning that battle potentially with Connor Wong to be the team's full-time catcher for the remainder of the season. Obviously, we'll see. There's some more time there. Bottom of the third, Bregman walks, Abreu singles, Romy Gonzalez with a sack fly. So it's 3-1 Sox. And again, Crochet didn't feel like he had his best stuff, but he got you through 5. Whitlock pitches the 6th, then the 7th, and really all the wheels fell off there. I see several of you lined up on the phone lines. Again, 617-779-7937. We're going to hear from Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, first. Then I'm going to get to your calls and text. Here is Alex Cora, manager of the Red Sox, after today's 5-4 loss to the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, I mean, tough week for the bullpen, right? But we got good stuff. They're good pitchers, you know. We just have to make adjustments. Like I said before the game, we have to make sure we execute. There were a lot of two-out hits, two-strike hits, and we just got to be better. I mean, if you look at the pitch to Jeffers, it was right in the middle, right? He hung a off-speed pitch in the middle. The fastball to Bader was up in the zone. He was hunting, and he got it, you know, and put a good swing on it.
You see from Crochet, and is he okay with the hit that he
came? Yeah, the ball hit him. The ball hit him in the nose. So he's okay. Obviously grinded through the last one. And the way we were lined up, you know, it just made sense. You know, 90-something pitches, you know, that happened. So move on to the next level. We weren't able to finish it.
Even before that, it seemed like he was a little maybe off command-wise?
The walks put him in a bad spot. He talked about it. He didn't realize the pitch count was up there. He was efficient early on, and then, you know, he had to, you know, work hard to get the outs in the 5th.
Any concern about the velocity being a tick lower?
No, not at all.
Is the nose, like, broken or anything?
No.
So, basically, you guys had
first couple of innings looked like you had something going and just couldn't continue
with it? Yeah, I mean, like I said, their bullpen is really good. And after the fifth inning, they kept bringing their guys. We hit some balls hard. Sedan, we hit some ground balls hard, but we didn't put pressure on them.
Seems like that has been a trend, though, of just the season with left offense coming hard early on and then kind of stalling later in the game. Like, what can you do, I guess, to kind of fix that?
Keep working. That's the most important thing. Willie, he put a good swing at the end. Hammy hit the ball hard. Just got to keep working, and things are going to change.
They told us during the game that Tristan had successful surgery. Do you have any update on that?
I don't, but, like I said, we're going to be with him. The support group is great around him, and he's going to be okay.
Have you had a chance to visit with him at all?
Not yet. Yeah. Probably tomorrow.
Yeah. What do you see on that line drive to Hamilton?
I was downstairs on the way up, and I saw the replay, but I didn't see it. Yeah.
That was manager Alex Cora of the Boston Red Sox talking about today's frustrating 5-4 loss to the Minnesota Twins. We have a bunch of you on the phone lines here, so let's just get right to your phone lines. Let's start with Phil in Mendon. He's been hanging on the longest. Phil, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
Oh, like you had mentioned, 9 one-run losses, most in the Major League Baseball. But the only good thing is the New York Yankees have several. So that's why we're only going to be 2 games out of first. The other problem is 8 to 10 strikeouts per game if you average it out. I think at this point you have to look at either bringing up both or either Roman Anthony or Marcelo Myers, your infield. Even take the former Red Sox draft pick and former Yankees first baseman, Anthony Rizzo. It's time to do something. I mean, if you compare the records from last year to this year, we're actually behind. We're actually a little bit better with the players we had last year. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a great season. You know, we got Bregman. We got this one, the relief pitching. But it's either they're hitting the beginning of the few innings and then they blow it at the end or the relief. I mean, we're in Toronto. We're up 6-0 and all. You lose that game. The one-run games are driving me crazy. So they're going to have to make some moves. They got to make some moves just to get these people going in the clubhouse.
Phil, appreciate the call. And it's an interesting point, especially in light of the Tristan Casas injury, and obviously best wishes to Tristan Casas. That's a pretty devastating injury, the patella tendon tear. He did have surgery today. But now it's, do you keep Roman Gonzalez at first? Do you try to put Devers there? I mean, I'm of the school where I'd say try Devers at first, and I know it might take a couple weeks to ramp him up there, and then maybe that opens a spot for Roman Anthony to start out as your DH, kind of acclimate to the majors. Again, guy's only 20 years old, play some outfield when guys are out, but it just feels like there's a lot of stagnation in the Red Sox right now, and they're just starting to remind me of a team from a couple years ago, 2023 San Diego Padres. Ton of talent, really good, should have been a really good team. They went 82-80. They had a pretty good run differential as well that year, but just a team that really was consistently below expectations all season on. And so far on May 4th, Red Sox are starting to remind me of that Padres team from a couple years ago. That's not a team you want to emulate, right? A team with a lot of talent that consistently underachieve. Let's go to Wally in Fall River. Try to sneak in another call or two here. Wally, welcome in.
Yeah,
what do you got after today?
We keep on having too much talent, but still we're only at 500. We don't play well at home. These teams come into Fenway Park and they beat us. The Twins aren't a great team. We played lousy against Chicago White Sox and Toronto. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it's a tough situation. We can't win one-run games. We don't hit out. We score a couple of runs and we don't hit for 5 innings or score runs. The starting pitch has been decent, but I think eventually you're going to have to do something with the bullpen. But as far as calling these guys up, what do you do with some of these guys? You know, you got an overload at certain positions. Serious moves have to be made. What do you do with Trevor Story? You're not going to release him. But as far as Devers at first, I don't know. He's acclimated to the DH right now. I don't know if he could handle that.
Yeah, Wally, thanks for the call, and it's an interesting point. And the Red Sox are kind of in a tough spot because not a ton of organizational depth at first base. Like, Vaughn Grissom doesn't have much experience there. I know he's been talked about it, and it seems like he's going to get some reps there coming up. They have Romy Gonzalez, but it's just beyond Casas, not a lot of depth there, just natural depth. So, I mean, is it an – and I don't think Anthony's a first baseman, but do you bring up Anthony as part of a larger move where Devers goes to first base? I don't know. And he mentioned Story. Like, yeah, Marcelo Meyer's playing great down in AAA, but, I mean, you don't bring him up and play him over Campbell. You're not going to bring him up and play him over Story. So that's something to kind of think about as well. Yeah, and he mentioned at home, too. And this is something the Red Sox had a big problem last year, especially down the stretch playing at home. I mean, last year the Red Sox were 38-43 at home. A losing record at Fenway Park last year. And you look at this year, like that first series against the Cardinals, right? They won, it was supposed to be a four-game series. They only played three because of a rainout, I believe. And they had, they played three, a doubleheader that Sunday, and they won two games on that Sunday. They swept the Cardinals series, but then after that, like they lose three out of four to Toronto at home. Then they take three out of four from the White Sox, which is pretty good. But then they lose two out of three to Seattle at home. Now they've lost two out of three to the Twins at home. So it's another year of them just not playing well at home. Again, losing record at home last year. So far, they've been really inconsistent at home. They've had some, again, started the year against St. Louis playing great at home. Since then, they just really haven't been that good. I know they took three out of four from the White Sox, but the White Sox are historically bad, so you should take three out of four from. I see a bunch of you lined up on the phone lines. Our phone lines are almost full here. 617-779-7937. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back, and we'll get through all your phone calls coming up next, so stay on the line. Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, and that highlight was brought to you by Nissan. You deserve a car that thrills you, and Nissan's got an exciting full line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself. Shop your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com today. Again, that was the double in the eighth inning. Gave the Twins a 4-3 lead. Not the game-winning run. That was actually Trevor Larnach's RBI single, which put the Twins up 5-3 at the time. Willie Abreu's homer cut it to 5-4. Red Sox were not able to complete the comeback. Another frustrating afternoon, as you could hear in Will Fleming's voice. Kind of feel bad for him over the last 10 days or so. He's had his share of frustrating games to call. And this Red Sox team, again, 18-18. They're at 500. Out of those 18 losses, half of them, 9, are by one run, which is the most in the major leagues. Again, a wasted effort from Garrett Crochet, 5 innings, 1 run. Didn't look as dominant as we would expect, but still, only 1 run. Red Sox had a 3-1 lead. Whitlock on the mound. Harrison Bader down 0-2. Walks him eventually. Vasquez singles. Ryan Jeffers gets them both in. 2 RBI single. 3-3. Then, of course, you just heard the call to put the Twins up 4-3. And then that was all she wrote after the 5-3 lead. We got a bunch of you on hold here. I'm just going to try to get to you in order. A lot of you want to talk about the Red Sox. So let's start with Bob in Western Mass. He's got some thoughts on today's Red Sox game. Bob, welcome in.
Oh, hey, thanks. Hey, I want to keep this short. This is like a broken record. If you remember last season when they miraculously had a chance at the end, they just don't know how to shorten up their swing. Part of the one-run games is moving people over. It's like watching a bad correct softball team where the guys think they're old high school players and they hit, you know, swinging for the fences every time. You know, that's what they have to do. I know the bullpen's been letting them down, but you have to move the runner along, and they're all swinging for the fences.
Bob, appreciate the call. We did see earlier in the game, right, so Carlos Narvaez had the single, the 2 RBI single to put the Red Sox up 2-1. Right before that, David Hamilton did have a sacrifice to move runners over. So we have seen that a little bit. But yeah, you're right, not quite enough. Feels like the Red Sox, and Lou Maloney was talking about this on the game broadcast on Nesson too, that it's like you look at this team and you're like, man, they should be better than what they are. And they've had these stretches of playing really well in games, but they're not playing complete 9-inning games. And they're not doing enough of the little things right now. It's not as bad little things wise, quote unquote, as say 2 years ago or last year, but still not enough for a team this talented. And again, they're sitting there at 18-18, a team that went 81-81 last year, 18-18 right now. So quick math, that's 99-99, right? So yeah, not great in your last couple hundred games or so. Let's go to John in New Hampshire. Wants to talk about Alex Cora in the Red Sox. John, welcome in.
John, thanks for taking the call. Ready? Get your notebook out. I'm going to diagnose exactly.
I got the notebook out. I'm ready to go.
Are you ready? The problem is Alex Cora, just like it was in 2024, just like it was in 2023. He manages like a Division III college manager. We keep saying we have all the talent in the world on this team, and he can't manage it. We're still 500. Let me ask you a question. Where is Trevor Story? Was today the correct day to give him a day off and get David Hamilton in there?
Yeah.
And
it didn't feel so much on that single to center that should have been an error, right?
Say again?
It didn't feel like a good day to have Story not there on
that single
to center, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I called in after the Guardians series, and I said, Red Sox Nation, prepare for these types of losses over the course of – we've seen it for 3 years now. It's ridiculous. The manager has to go. It's unacceptable.
I do have some – and thanks for the call, John. I do have some thoughts on Cora myself, but before I get to that, I want to go to Zach in Hartford because he also seems like he is mad at Alex Cora. Zach, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
Yeah, hey, guys. I really completely agree with John, what he was saying. I'm just so frustrated with this team. Like, Crochet should be going 7 innings at least. I know he threw, like, 89 pitches, but he's our guy. And Alex Cora, just his decision-making all over the place. And I honestly think there's a culture problem with the team, too. We got guys putting on the Wally head when we're down. Like, that's got to change. And pinch-hitting Toro for Narvaez, like, what, does he not trust our players? Like, Narvaez is having a great day. That's just Bush League stuff, if you ask me.
Zach, appreciate the call. And you can even go back to the other night in Toronto where he chooses not to walk Vlad Jr. And he made that comment after the game, like, well, if it was the ALCS, like, maybe it'd be different. It was just, I'm like, well, this game still matters. Like, I know it's not the ALCS, but games in late April and May, like, they matter too. And this has been something, all right, if you think back to Cora's managerial time here, like, 2018, they were the best team in baseball, 108 wins, dominated everyone. But if you remember back, like 2019, started slow that year, did not play well in April that year, did not play well early in the season. 2022, didn't play well early in the season. Like, go back to last year. Because, like, last year, I think at the trade deadline, they were 10 games over 500. But if you go back to the first couple months of last year, they went 15-11 in April last year, and then 12-16 in May last year. And now, as I said, we're sitting here at 18-18 on May 4th. So hasn't happened every single year under Alex Cora, but it's kind of been a consistent thing where this team will start slow and varying personnel, right? Like the 2019 Red Sox, vastly different personnel than the 2025 Red Sox, but you see them starting slow in both years. I mean, even last year to this year, like last year, you didn't have Crochet. You didn't have Bregman. Granted, Tanner Houck was great in May, but you didn't have Crochet. You didn't have Bregman. And you were 12-16 in May last year. This year, you have not played well to start the month of May. You didn't play well enough in April. You're 18-18. So this starting slow thing has been an issue under Cora several times. And you go back, and what has happened with this team, and I feel like, and you can correct me out there if I'm wrong, I feel like this has happened at least 3-4 times where they'll have a bad April or May, and then all of a sudden in June they'll get hot. July they'll play pretty well. They get to the trade deadline, and either they don't do enough at the trade deadline or water finds its level, whatever, and they just play poorly in August and September. I mean, it happened last year, happened in 2023. You know, and part of that, again, both years maybe not enough was done at the trade deadline for the clubhouse's or to the clubhouse's liking. But it's just – it is something to notice. And I'm not telling you Alex Cora is a terrible manager, but I think it's a fair question. Like, why is this team consistently starting slow season after season under Alex Cora? I don't know. Let's get to some more of your phone calls here as we round out the hour after the Red Sox 5-4 loss to the Twins. Let's go to Rick in Salem. Let's talk about the Red Sox. Rick, welcome in.
Sean, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, but the reality of this team's not that good. This is what this team is. This team's nothing more than a 500 team or a couple games over 500. They have some talent on this team. But then you go to like areas like the bullpen, ready? Then you go like the other guy was talking, just fundamentals, doing things right. They don't do it. And this got to fall back in the manager, too, in the coaching staff. As much as I hate to say it, and I'm hoping for Veritek to be the next manager eventually when that time comes. He's in the dugout also right now. So I don't know. Listen, I just don't think this team's as good as this is. They make it out to the team because they don't do a lot of things well. Like, they don't move runners over. They get their bases loaded, no outs, and they're not scoring. It's like, come on, bro. That's going to kill you in a game. And Crochet, listen, Crochet needs to start going further than that into games. Look at Max Fried. Max Fried's pitching better than Crochet right now. Okay, check the stats on that. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. I love Crochet, but you know what I'm saying? This team's going nowhere. This is maybe a wild card team, and that's nothing. That's as bad as the league is, really, the way it's spread out. The team.
Appreciate
nothing.
The call, no, no Rick. Team. And sorry to cut you off there, Rick. Appreciate the call, though. And look, his point on Crochet, I think we've seen some inconsistent. Like, he had 5 innings on opening day in Texas, but then he went 8 innings against Baltimore, then 5 2/3 in a loss to Toronto, but then 7 1/3 against the White Sox. Then the next start against the White Sox, he went 6. Then 5 against Seattle, but then 7 strong against Toronto, 5 again today. So, I mean, look, the dude has a 2.02 ERA. He's been really good, but he hasn't gone quite as deep into games as maybe I think we were consistently expecting. And I guess the thing that bothers me is he's, you know, the caller says, oh, maybe they're not that good. Well, they should be a lot better. And he's not wrong. Like, they haven't played well. I'm not disputing his point, but you just look at the guys that, like, Duran's probably a top 20 player in baseball. Like, Devers has a $300 million contract. Bregman's been flat out great. But you have Bregman, right? You have Story. You have all these guys. You add Crochet. Chapman's been pretty good, right? Like, I don't know. Like, this team should be better than 18-18. It's just annoying that they're not. Let me sneak in one more Red Sox call before we go to break. Matt in Connecticut. Matt, welcome in. What do you got?
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad. What do you got?
Yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, I know we were talking about the first base situation and maybe putting Devers there, but obviously he's already kind of transitioning to a new role this year. What would you think about maybe getting Trevor Story some reps at first base and seeing if he can kind of fit that role, and then that opens up the space for Marcelo Meyer at short, and then obviously along with that move, maybe you bring up Roman Anthony.
And Matt, thanks for the call. And look, I'm not against it. But I think whatever you do at first base, whether it's Devers, whether it's Story, whether it's somebody else, or who knows, maybe Romy Gonzalez taking the job, it's going to take a couple weeks to phase in. So they're going to have to make a decision quickly. I'm not against Story and then bringing up Marcelo Meyer. I would like to put Devers at first and bring up Roman Anthony and put Anthony at DH, and he can fill in at outfield kind of as needed and kind of get his feet wet in the big leagues. But I'm open to either one. But they're going to have to figure it out pretty quickly here. We are going to transition to talk some Celtics coming up this hour. I know many of you are passionate about the Red Sox game today. If you want to call in or text in and talk Red Sox, still 617-779-7937. That's fine. We can still do that. I am going to have Justin Turpin come in next. We're going to talk some more Celtics. So if you want to call on Celtics, feel free to do that. If you want to still call and complain about the Red Sox, Terp's a good man. He and I will take your calls on the Red Sox. Don't worry. So coming right up, we got Justin Turpin to preview the Celtics' incoming sweep of the Knicks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40. period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Back here on WEEI, John Lyons. We're going to wrap up Red Sox review in the next few minutes. Got a few texts and a call, and then I'm going to turn to Justin Turpin. We're going to dive into Celtics Knicks again. Really frustrating 5-4 loss for the Red Sox. 3-1 lead in the seventh. Give up the tying two runs in the seventh. Give up the go ahead runs in the eighth. William Abreu had a home run the bottom of the eighth, but not enough. So let's jump into the phones and text. We'll wrap up Red Sox review. Go to Celtics. Let's go to Sean in Montana on the phone lines. He wants to talk Red Sox. Sean, welcome in. What do you got?
Hello. Yeah, thanks so much for taking my call on this very frustrating day. I'm really getting sick and tired of this team. I mean, it's like this bullpen is a menace. And Garrett Whitlock, I can no longer trust him. I mean, twice he blew leads for us. Twice. Against Toronto and now against the Minnesota Twins. And it makes me sad. I don't know what it is. It seems like every time we are ready to go and start taking charge of things, then they take a step back, 17-14, and then they lose 2 out of 3 against Toronto, 2 out of 3 against a team that is not going to be good this year in the Minnesota Twins. Red Sox fans, you have every right to be frustrated, just like me. They need to stop this mess and start winning ball games. I mean, it's like you've got to start gaining ground. We were supposed to be good this year, and look at the first 36 games, 18-18. And I agree with what you were saying. I was listening, and I totally agree with you. This stuff keeps up. This is like a repeat of the last few years. Last year, remember, 81-81, 78-84, and 22-23. So I'm just telling you, it's very frustrating to be playing like this.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for the call. It's been an immensely frustrating start. Like I mentioned earlier, you sweep St. Louis in that first home series. By the way, you lose 3 out of 4 to Texas, lose that first game to Baltimore, but then you win the next two against Baltimore, sweep St. Louis, but then what do? You lose 5 out of your next 6. Then later on, you win 4 in a row, then you lose, 4 out of 6 after that. So it's like, to the caller's point, they'll win 3 or 4 in a row, and then they'll lose 4 out of 6. Like even as he said this week, you know, you win the last two games of that Cleveland series. You win the first game of the Toronto series 10-2, convincing with Crochet on the mound, and then you blow a 6-0 lead. Then you lose another game after that. Then you bounce back, beat the Twins 6-1 in a really exciting game Friday night. And then you lose back-to-back to Minnesota. So at 617-779-7937, we'll take all your calls on the Red Sox. Got plenty of texts here. One texter from the 646. 2024, the Red Sox were 21-19 to start the year. This year, 18-18. So sounds like more of the same. A lot of people not happy with Alex Cora, and I get it. I mean, this keeps happening. So if you want to call in, text in on the Red Sox, feel free. Jeez, welcome to the radio, John. That's great. Feel free to, but we are going to transition to talk some Celtics here. Again, I'm John Lyons. We have Tom Cristofoli producing, and I'm joined now by the one and only, the pride of Braintree, Massachusetts, Justin Turpin. Justin, welcome in.
Thanks for having me on. What's going on?
It's a pleasure. For those that don't know, Justin Turpin does a terrific job covering the Celtics for WEEI.com, and you probably see him all over Twitter and Instagram covering the Celtics as well. And he was part of our post-game shows all through last playoffs, all the way through the NBA Finals and the Celtics' 18th championship. And as we are in the drive here, Justin, for Banner 19, first of all, you and I haven't talked Celtics playoffs in a while.
So this is nice.
Excited to do that again. And I just want to get your sense. Let's start with, you were at practice yesterday. And to me, I think the biggest story going into this Knicks series is Jrue Holiday, right? Because Tatum seemed to have bounced back from his injury at 35 points a game in his 3 games after he came back from injury. Jaylen Brown looked a little shaky in the first round, but he just had essentially a week off between game 5 against the Magic and of course game 1 against the Knicks. But Jrue Holiday missed the end of that series. How has he looked at practice? Are you optimistic he will be there for tomorrow night's game one?
Yeah, so he wasn't on the court for the portion of practice open to the media, but Joe Mazzulla was asked about it and said that he was able to go through a full practice, and he's not on the injury report tomorrow, and that's a big deal for the Celtics. And he's been really good against the Knicks this number. I was looking at his numbers earlier, 16 points per game. He's scored over 14 in all three of those, and when he's offensively a threat like that, they are just such a better team. I mean, they're 54-3 when he scores 14 or more points. That's insane. 54-3.
And it felt like the biggest play of that Magic series was his dunk in game two.
Yeah.
And he does so many things. And I know our colleague Adam Jones used to deride Marcus Smart for quote-unquote winning plays. I know. But Jrue Holiday does do so many of those things. And I know you and I have talked about this, but I always go back to it felt like last year's playoff run, every series had one game at least where he had some big impact. And obviously it was more than one game, but like I think it was game five against Cleveland. He was great down the stretch. Game four against Cleveland before that, great down the stretch. Game three against Indiana, everyone remembers that steal he had. And that was a massive play. He also scored the last 5 points of that game, including an and-one layup for the Celtics to win game three against Indiana. So it feels like he gives you something like that every single series.
You and I talked about it last year. He made a case for Eastern Conference Finals MVP.
Yeah,
like he was terrific in that series.
He was dynamite.
They were a couple plays away, a couple possessions from being down 3-1 in that series, if not for Jrue Holiday. Like, he was fantastic, and they're going to need him in this series. That with the Knicks, like, obviously the Celtics are much more talented, so it's going to really come down to those margins and controlling what they can control. And Jrue Holiday is that steady hand that makes sure they do that. And I always go back to it, like, when he was introduced as a Celtic, Brad Stevens is sitting up there with Steve Pagliuca and Wick Grosbeck on the podium, and Brad is just smiling ear to ear the entire time, just staring at him, smiling, and like they knew that that was the piece that got him over, and he's just a winner. Like, that's what he is, and they missed him. There's no coincidence that he was out in game three, they turned the ball over 21 times. Like, that's hand in hand.
And just to review, last year against the Pacers in the four-game sweep, he averaged 18-7-6 on 58% shooting, and he was locked down defensively.
Don't forget about that offensive rebound in game four too.
Yeah,
it allowed them to dribble the clock out.
And it's funny you bring that. And I think one of the reasons Jaylen, and not to go relitigate this whole thing, but like Jaylen Brown had that shot in game one to force overtime. He had the big defensive play late in game four. And of course, the pass to Derek White for the game winning shot that won the series in game four. So he had some of those signature moments. And you and I talked about this in the NBA Finals. He had that huge block in game two at the end with Derek White. He had that huge shot to put them up by four at the end of game three. So Holiday maybe didn't have quite as many signature moments as a player like Jaylen Brown, but he was fantastic in that stretch run. And it's a guy that, like, you can get by the Magic without Jrue Holiday, as obviously they did. I think you can get by the Knicks without Jrue Holiday. But if you're going to win a championship, he's going to need to be that fourth or fifth option, depending on each night, that you're going to need if you're going to win a championship.
For sure. And it's not always going to show up in the box score. And that's the thing about Jrue Holiday that I really admire, is that his impact goes well beyond just a box score. I mean, look at game one versus Orlando, for example. Everyone was crediting him. All the players after the game were crediting him for changing that game. He had 9 points. Like, that was it. But it was just his defensive presence, his ball pressure, just what he does for this team. They're just much more comfortable with him on the floor. And he's going to be important, especially if you're talking, seeing Cleveland down the road, maybe Oklahoma City, even against New York. They're going to need him. And there's no coincidence that he's the only player in NBA history to win a championship in his first year on two different teams.
Yeah, and he's such a steadying presence, too. Like,
yeah.
It feels like, and this used to be a big issue with the Celtics, where the moment would get big and they'd play with their food or they wouldn't. They've gotten past that, I think, pretty much to a large extent. But even still in those tight moments, or maybe they go a couple possessions without scoring and the game starts to teeter, he makes a big basket, or he makes the right pass, or he gets, to your pointer, the key rebound. Like, he's such a steadying presence. So, yeah, 9 points in game one, but they're an impactful.
And they all came in the third quarter,
like,
and it changed the game.
And that's where they pulled away.
Right.
Because what was it in game one? The Magic had, was it like 11 points in the third quarter, something ridiculous like that? Or 14? Like, yeah, like that was an impactful quarter. So that's something I'm watching. Let's take a few minutes here because we're going to dive in fully to Celtics versus Knicks. But it's been almost 7 days since we had Celtics basketball tonight, or tomorrow night at tip-off. It'll be 6 days. What were your thoughts on the Magic series? Because I thought that was a five-game test. If you're much like the Indiana sweep last year in the conference finals, that was a sweep, but it was tough. That was kind of like the Orlando series to me.
We could be looking back on that Orlando series as the toughest series the Celtics see, and they won in five in the first round against a seven seed. Like, that's how tough they played them. Again, we'll see what happens with Cleveland. We'll see what happens down the road. But that was a really tough series.
And physically, the only other team I think can be that tough is OKC.
OKC. Yeah. And they won't even... The thing is with OKC is the way they defend the Celtics, they're okay with letting them shoot the threes. Orlando wasn't letting them shoot them at all. And for them to win that series in five games and just completely playing a different style of basketball is really encouraging if you're the Celtics. But I think it did kind of go how it should have. This defense was good enough where they were going to get one out of the Celtics. And the fact that that game the Celtics lost, they scored 11 points in the third quarter and 34 in the second half and still only lost by one possession, says a lot about this team. But I think that was a good test for them. Obviously, you don't love the bumps and bruises in the first round when Jason Tatum misses a game. Jaylen, obviously dealing with the knee injury. Jrue Holiday, hamstrings are tricky. He's 34. You don't love that. But the fact that they were tested in that sense and that they had to go out and completely shift their style against a team that you could see later on in Oklahoma City will do something similar, that is an excellent first series for the Celtics. And then for them to do it in five games and have six nights off is great.
And I think the six nights off is important because I agree with you. I think we could look back on this, at least in the East, as their most physical series of the play. I mean, it's going to be more physical than the Knicks series. The Knicks series could go seven games, and I don't think it will. It could go seven games, and it still won't be as physical as the five versus Orlando. Like that. And also, I know Orlando kind of went over the line a few times. Not kind of. Like, they went over the line a few times. But that's a team. Like, I look at Orlando, I'm like, man, if they could get a couple shooters, and if they were healthy, like 2 years from now, I could see them in the conference finals.
I'm with you. And I was really impressed by Franz Wagner, especially.
Yeah.
I think Paolo gets a lot of credit over there. And I think they're kind of
He's
an overlooked team.
Too.
He's a badass.
Oh.
They're also, that 41-41 record is not indicative of who they are. They were eight games above 500. They all got banged up. They dropped six below. Like, they're a better team than that 41-41 record shows. But watching Franz up close and seeing him in that series, I was blown away. Like, that guy has all-star potential. And he's 23 years old. The fact that both him and Paolo are both 22. It's insane. Like, they are in a great spot. And like you said, like, they're two shooters away. I think they were expecting a little bit more from KCP to make some shots, which would have helped. And obviously he was terrible shooting the ball, but they're a couple pieces away from being a legitimate threat.
And they didn't have Jalen Suggs.
Right.
Another 23-year-old, by the way, in Jalen Suggs, who turns, I think, 24 soon, but that's not, we don't care.
All defensive guard.
Like,
third in scoring for
that. I really look at that team. Like, we're going to look back and be like, oh, the Celtics caught the magic at the beginning of their, and I'm not sitting here saying they're going to, you know, win championships, but a year or two from now, I could see the Magic in the conference finals.
And you don't want to see that team in the postseason. You do not. Like, if you're the Celtics, just learned it. Like, you do not want to see this team.
Yeah, I think the fact that the Celtics got them in the first round was good because they came in. And I know Jaylen Brown was banged up at the end of the year, but outside of him, the Celtics went into that series healthy, which I think was important because they got a little bit beat up, and now they have 6 days off. Like, if they were playing them now after already having played a playoff series, they'd still beat them. But I'd be like, oh, man, this is really going to take a toll on them. So, I mean, I give credit to Orlando. I thought, again, that's a team on the rise. And now it's Celtics-Knicks. And I think this is a fun matchup from a media standpoint. It's a fun matchup from a fan standpoint. I don't know, you know, and you did a great piece on the website, how close it is on the court and by the numbers. So we're going to get into all that coming up next. I see some of you on the phone lines here. Hang on. We're going to get to your Celtics calls as soon as we get out of this break. But first, it's time to trend with our wonderful producer, Tom Crisafulli. Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, and I'm joined in studio for about 15 more minutes by Justin Turpin, who covers the Celtics for WEEI.com. We just wrapped up talking about the Orlando series as well as how Jrue Holiday has looked in practice, even though he's been kind of hidden away.
He has been.
Turp has been there. So, yeah, so we'll see. And Jrue could make a big difference in a potential series, I think, again. So, I think this series against the Knicks, to me, has to be the series, Turp, that they get through quickly. Because I think they're better than the Knicks. And I think, that, look, they're 4-0 against them this year, as we know. But you just had a tough physical series against Orlando. Assuming you get by the Knicks, you're going to have a really good Cleveland team who, as you pointed out before the year, Brad Stevens thinks is the best team in the East besides the Celtics. He voted for him in that SI poll. And let's say you get by Cleveland, it's probably going to be Denver or OKC, two elite teams. So this, you kind of want to be that one series. Can you get through it quickly? And that's not to, like, I don't want to sit here, and I know I joked earlier before you came on, we're going to talk about the Celtics sweep coming up, right? But I don't want to be totally disrespectful of the Knicks. I just don't, like, I look at this series, and I see the Celtics second in offensive rating, fourth in defensive rating, second in net rating, and then I see the Knicks fifth in offensive rating, which is not bad, 13th in defensive rating, a Tom Thibodeau team, 13th, eighth in net rating, right? I don't know if I see a team in the Knicks that's going to be able to beat the Celtics more than once.
And the reason I look at that the most is Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. Those are two guys they can absolutely not take off the floor, and they are going to be the Celtics' best offensive players because the Celtics are just going to target them. The numbers are pretty staggering when you look at it that way. I mean, they shot 55% against Towns this year and 46% against Brunson. There's just no answer. They're getting a good look every time, and the Knicks cannot afford to take them off the floor. So if their offense isn't making up for it, if the Celtics are doing enough to slow them down, it's more so about slowing down the others, which they have this year, and which why the Celtics have been able to run away with these games. Like OG,
Ananobi only has 9 points per game against the Celtics, averages 18. Yeah. Right.
And Mikal Bridges is 5 below his points per game as well.
Speaking of Bridges, too, Tatum this year, 13 of 19 shooting against Bridges as the primary defender, and that's the guy they gave up like 6,000 first-round picks and swaps to get.
To go and defend Tatum, and he can't
like, they
do
gave
it.
Up a similar package, by the way, that like, the Phoenix gave up to get Kevin Durant.
Right.
Like, not exactly the same, but, like, not that
it's
far
It's wild off. To think about. It's, like, five first-round picks, one of them's only one's unprotected. Like, they went all out to try to get these stoppers. And granted, OG Anunoby's been good when defending the Jays. He's been the only one, really, that has. Even
and he
Josh
is a
Hart,
good defender.
He's a great defender. Yeah. Josh Hart, I think, is a respectable defender, too, and the Celtics are shooting, like, over 50% against him as well.
Yeah.
There's just way too many options for them to hunt. And that the Celtics are elite mismatch hunters. That's we hear about it all the time, this killer whale offense. Like, that's what they do. There are just so many seals on this Knicks team that it's going to be the points are going to be easy to come by. Average 125 points a game.
That's what Tom Cristofoli says about us. A bunch of seals in the studio. Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Jacob in the great city of Brockton. Wants to talk about the Celtics. Jacob, welcome in. Thanks for holding.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So I just had a quick question here. So we hear a lot of talk right now about, obviously, you got Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns coming into play. They're going to be a big piece. We also have Derek White, Drew Holiday can guard Brunson, confident that we can hold Cat to a comfortable number. How confident, or what do you guys feel on this take right here? Kristaps Porzingis, does he have to have a big series against his past team here for the Celtics to sweep him in four?
Jacob, thanks for the call. Terp, go.
I would say yeah. I mean, it's so hard to sweep a team. Like, everyone's going to have to be at their best.
If you were to sweep the Knicks, that would mean 8-0 against them this year. Like,
which
that's
is incredibly
just
hard
the
to
law
do.
Of averages. That's why I said I think it's going to be a 5-game series. Because also, too, like, again, the Knicks are good enough to win a game. Like now, if the Knicks win 2 or 3 games, I'm going to be like,
but they were 0-10 against the Celtics, Thunder, and Cavs.
Yeah, against
like,
the
they
three
don't
best
have
teams
any
in the NBA.
Big wins per se over any of the upper echelon teams. And to the caller's point about Porzingis, he has been fantastic against the Knicks. He's averaged 24.5 points per game. That's his highest total against any team in the league. Shooting 50% from the field, 45% from three. Like, he's been fantastic.
Hit that huge shot against them in their last
game. Eight threes when they last played.
And this season, so Porzingis missed the first two matchups against the Knicks. Of course, one of them was banner night that he was out, and he was out in the second matchup as well. The two games he's played against them, so the first game back against the Knicks, 15-7-2, so not bad. But that second game at MSG, 34-4-3, and that was a game Jaylen Brown only played, I think, right about 21.5 minutes. He was he was still hobbled at that
point.
And
Horford was out.
And Horford was out, too. So they leaned. That was the Porzingis and Tatum show. And Tatum, of course, had that huge three at the end of regulation. Porzingis, though, again, 34-4-3. I mean, he was, for stretches of that game, the best player on the floor.
And he hit eight threes. And I did an article on it at the time. I'm pretty sure the average of them was like 27.5 feet deep. So he's, like, bombing these threes.
Which is, that's nuts to me. Like, and he does that all the time. He had last year the fourth deepest three-point average in the NBA.
And he was asked about it after. And this is something he's experimented with. When he got traded from Washington to Boston, he was working on it a little bit. He tried to move in, and his shots were coming up short. So he just backed up, and the efficiency didn't really drop. But that's huge, what we're talking about with the spacing. when they have a rebounder like Karl Anthony Towns. Josh Hart, also a great rebounder. You're stretching the floor. You're bringing those guys out, especially Karl Anthony Towns. He's going to be the one guarding Kristaps. He's not going to be able to grab the rebounds if he's out on the perimeter. So that's a big deal.
And Towns, to me, when they traded for him, that was their answer to Porzingis.
Yeah.
Right? You know, a big that can stretch the floor. Actually, on catch-and-shoot threes, Porzingis coming into the year was better. On just straight-up three-point percentage, Towns was a little bit better. Like, that was their answer to Porzingis. And in the two games, especially the last one, Porzingis just been flat-out better.
Yeah.
Like, and it's interesting, too, because I felt like Porzingis didn't play well against Orlando overall. Like, game two, I thought he played well. Yeah, I thought he played well in game two and got bloodied up that game. And I thought you saw some signs of life in game four, right? He hit those first two threes of the series he had in the second half there. But on the whole, like you said, he mentioned it, he didn't play that well. And I feel like this is a good op, like 6 days off, and the Knicks are a great matchup for him. Like, Porzingis is a great player. So a lot of teams, you know, are good matchups or whatever, but the Knicks specifically, and you mentioned the numbers earlier, this is a great matchup for him too.
Yeah, for sure. And we mentioned their defensive liabilities earlier. We really highlighted Brunson and Towns, but they also have smaller defenders on the floor that Kristaps is just shooting over, and he's had no problem doing that. He wasn't able to really do that against Orlando, and I think he was most bothered by the physicality of that series. That's just really not how he wants to play. Like, that's just not his style. This is much more his style. In this series, the Celtics are going to look a lot more like themselves. Like, there's going to be a lot of threes. The ball's going to be moving. They're going to score a lot of points. It's going to look like the Celtics of old. And whatever we just saw against Orlando, it's going to look completely different. It's not going to be that team.
And I felt like one thing they did, and Mazzulla did, that was smart, was they had Porzingis start rolling to the rim a lot more starting in game four. And I found it interesting, like, leading into this series. So the Celtics ran pick and rolls 134 times against Karl Anthony Towns this year, which was the most they ran them against any defender all year.
And they barely did it in the final game.
I know. And obviously it's a little bit inflated because you did play the Knicks four times. Like, you only played a lot of those West teams twice.
Yeah.
Right? So it's but still 134 times. And like you said, in that fourth game, really
they didn't run
so
anything. They weren't running like any offense.
So it's like, if you want to call it, like, in 3.25 games, they ran 134 times. So it feels like Porzingis is comfortable doing that. They're going to do that, I think, a ton. Unless Thibodeau has some adjustment and the Knicks can stand up to that, I think this is going to be a pick and roll and a catch-and-shoot three series by the Celtics off, and that's good. They're just going to do that constantly until they're stopped.
I'm just not sure if there's an adjustment you can make. Like, you have two net negative defenders on the floor. That's almost impossible to mask, and you need both of them to be on the floor to succeed, because that's how you hang around.
Especially when the Celtics have five-plus defenders.
Right.
That's the tough thing. And five guys that can shoot.
That's the thing with the Celtics. Like, they were top two in defense the last 2 years. I think they dropped down to five this year, but they're consistently a top five defense.
Their defensive rating was fourth.
It's never really talked about, but like, their defenses under Joe Mazzulla have been fantastic. Everyone looks at the three-pointers and the offense, but they are a very defensive-minded team with Joe, and they do a great job. And the thing is with the Knicks, like, if they're going to keep pacing this, they need to score. And they're going to have to keep Brunson and Towns on the floor, and there's just nothing you can do.
And that was the thing in the Orlando series. Like, Orlando, I thought, did a great job defending the Celtics, but there was a lot of lower scoring games and quarters in that for Orlando. And part of that is they couldn't hit shots, but the Celtics defensively were great. And that's something, you go back 2 years when the Celtics lost to Miami in the conference finals, they were not good defensively that year. And I think there was a lot of questions then about Mazzulla and, hey, is this guy just a most important status three-point attempts and doesn't care about defense? Remember Brogdon came out when they were down 0-3 and was like, oh, we kind of got away from our identity last year. And then all of a sudden last year, I mean, they were top three in O-rate, D-rate, net rate all year. Because in all three. Then this year they've been great again.
I think something that really, Joe's a very intelligent guy. He's a great coach. And I think it really came to him that the connectivity of the offense and the defense, how the two are connected, because he stresses that all the time now. And it's not something he necessarily stressed his first year. And I think part of that's becoming more comfortable. He was thrown into the fire. I mean, we all know the story.
Yeah, that was he was put in a bad spot.
But I think he learned from that. Like, that first year, that heartbreak they had with Miami, I think everyone kind of learned from it. And they parlayed everything they learned over the last 8 or 9 years and put together for a championship last year. Now, especially against these series in the playoffs, they understand that the most important thing is focusing on what you can control. You can always control your level of effort on defense. You can control the glass to an extent. You can control how you turn the ball over. And they've really minimized all of those categories. Like, they set a franchise record this year for fewest turnovers in the season. Like, they've done a great job doing those things, because I think they've realized the importance of just doing what you can do. controlling the margin of the game and just focusing on what you can control. And sometimes the talent is just that good or it's going to blow it out like that.
And I think you go back to the one game against the Knicks this year that was close. That was the game the Celtics had 15 turnovers, which was the most in any of the four matchups that they had. So it's an interesting point, too, like how good they've been defensively and how good they've been on the margins. I think you can argue they've been better on the margins than last year. And part of that is I think they have that championship hurdle they've overcome. Even Tatum talked about playing a little bit freer than he has in the past. So, and I think that's something that if you're good on the margins, they're talented enough that I just don't see the Knicks overcoming them. We do have a texter from the 401 and text and call line 617-779-7937. He says Brunson needs to steal game one or the Knicks are done. I do want to ask you, Celtics have had 6 days off, which physically, considering how tough Orlando was, is a good thing. But is there any concern that they come out rusty in game one? Again, Knicks just went 6 games against a good Pistons team and a physical Pistons team. So you always want rest. And we saw last year they had 9 days off, I think, before the finals, and they came out and blew out Dallas in game one. Any concern, though, that they're going to be a little bit rustier than the Knicks and could have some problems in game one?
Not with this team. They're too mature. They're too veteran. They've been there and they've done that. They understand what needs to be done in the playoffs. I think years past, I might have felt differently and be like, all right, this is where it's classic Celtics, slow start here. But that's the old Celtics. I really don't see it with this team. They really understand what it takes to win. And that oftentimes starts with a fast start. Like, if you come out and you punch New York in the mouth right away, like, that sets a tone for a series. And that's something that they really take a lot of pride in. So with the old Celtics, yes. With this iteration of the Celtics, I can't see that.
One thing I found interesting in that Orlando series was the last couple games, Porzingis, to start the second half, started on the bench both times. And he came off the bench, and he still played a lot of minutes. But it was that some sort of injury-ish thing? Was that just a matchup thing with Orlando? Like, I know you mentioned before that physically that series you felt was the toughest on him. I'm just curious, like, going into game one tomorrow, is this something we're going to keep seeing, or was that just an Orlando thing?
I think that was an Orlando thing. One of them was foul trouble. That was for sure.
Yeah, I think
one
was that game,
was game four a foul trouble issue. And the other, it was just not a great matchup for him. And they were going right at him. They shot like 50% against him when he was the closest defender.
Which,
like,
is kind of I think really that's got to be his worst in a 5-game stretch, right? I think, since he's come to the Celtics.
Right. I don't see that as being a case against New York. Like, this is something, and they're going to need him on the floor because Jalen Brunson was second in drives this year behind just SGA and draws fouls on 13% of those drives. So it's going to be key to put a big under there. Just Kristaps, put his arms out, defend without fouling. Don't put them on the line. Like, they don't, that the Knicks as a team do not get to the line often, but Jalen Brunson does. So it's, the key is really to keep him off the line. And Kristaps is obviously the best option for that. Put him at the rim, and he's elite rim protector. And, you know, hopefully he can win that matchup with Cat.
I'm wondering if this is a series for the double big. Like, Celtics 29th in pace, Knicks 26th in pace during the regular season. You mentioned Brunson's drives. They obviously have Karl-Anthony Towns. Is this a double big series or not so much?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Just because you can play fast and you can get out and run, you can play, you can, this will feed into your 3-point style, and this is going to look like the old Celtics. And they love the double bigs, but I don't think you necessarily need it in this series.
Yeah, that's fair. So, Terp, I know you got to run. You got another appearance to do. You're a busy man.
Yeah.
Before I let you go here, though, what do you think happens in this series? Give me who wins. I assume it's Celtics.
Yeah.
How many games, and is there a player or two that really stand out in this series?
I'm going to go Celtics in four, and I know how hard it is to beat a team 4 times in a row. Like you said, it's even harder to beat them 8 times in a row. But the gap between these two offensively, and like what the Celtics can do defensively and how they can punish those mismatches, there's just too many the Celtics can pick on. Like, there's just nothing Thibodeau can do. They don't have the bodies to slow the Celtics. It just, they built this team to be able to match up with the Celtics, and it might be the worst matchup in the league, like, which is kind of funny to think about.
It is ironic.
It's just, there's no way they can really stop them. They're averaging 125 points a game, making 21 threes. You're not going to beat the Celtics when that's happening. So maybe Brunson and Cat can get hot and win a game, but I really don't see the Celtics dropping a game in this series. There's just way too many matchups they can exploit. So Jason Tatum's the big answer. It's very easy, but he's averaging, what, 35 against them this year?
33.5, 6.75, right, and 7.
And like, he's picking nuts on all of them. Yeah. Mikal Bridges, a guy that they got to slow him down. He's shooting, what, 60% against
them? 13 of 19 when Bridges
Karl-Anthony was the primary. Towns, he shot 60% against.
Like, he had that 40-point game in MSG on Saturday night primetime in February.
Like there's a chance he could average 40 in this series. Like, there's no answer for Jason Tatum. And obviously, Drew Holiday. I'm curious to see how his health stands up and if he's able to carry on his total workload, because obviously hamstrings are difficult, especially when you're 34. So I'm looking at those two.
As someone who is not 34 but almost there, yeah, hamstrings are difficult. Yes, I'm fully aware. That is Justin Turpin, WEEI.com. Does a great job. And where do they find you on Twitter, by the way?
At Justin M. Turpin.
Justin M. Turpin. Turp, as always, love talking basketball with you, and thank you for taking the time.
Anytime.
Today.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks.
For sure. So that was Justin Turpin talking about the Celtics' upcoming series against the Knicks. 617-779-7937. If you want to talk Celtics-Knicks, I will be here until 6 o'clock. If you want to talk some Red Sox from today's game, we started the show talking Red Sox. You can certainly chime in on that. If you want to talk Patriots, you want to talk, I guess, Bruins. You know, I just, out of courtesy, I'll say Bruins. If you want to talk anything else, feel free to call in, text in. We have a 978 texter here. Why doesn't Joe get more credit? Yeah, it's a very talented team, but he did what Ime couldn't do even without KP last year. And I think, you know, to the texter's point from the 978, I think Mizzou is now getting more credit, and I think there was a healthy amount of skepticism around him that first year. And as Terp said, Missoula got put in a terrible spot. I mean, your head coach gets suspended. You're thrown in to be the head coach of a team that just went to the NBA Finals and was 5 minutes away from going up 3-1 against Golden State. And the Celtics offensively were really good in 2023, but defensively, they were just not good enough, and they played with their food way too many times. You know, went to 6 games against Atlanta, 7 games against Philly, go down 0-3 against Miami. So I think there was some fair and healthy skepticism of him after that first year. But I think, yeah, after last year, winning, you know, as dominant as they were, keeping their focus all year long, you have no Porzingis, some of the adjustments he had to make on the fly, and then Porzingis comes back in the finals, off the bench in that game one, then gets hurt in game two, so you don't have him for games 3 and 4. Comes back for game 5. I thought his management was really good, you know, for almost that entire playoff run. I'm trying to think off the top of my head a game that he got out-coached in, and I don't know. I don't know if I can really think of a game. I mean, maybe that game 2 against Cleveland last year, but even that, Donovan Mitchell had, what, 45 points? Like, I don't know. Like, so I get what you're saying, 978 Texter. I think he's now getting the credit he deserves. And I also think in the NBA, it's a players' league. Like, I mean, Greg Popovich, who just got elevated to team president of the Spurs, he'll no longer be their head coach. One of the best coaches ever. He had Tim Duncan, right? He had Kawhi Leonard. He had Ginobili, he had Parker, and they won 5 championships. And he was a big part of it. Don't get me wrong. Phil Jackson, right? He had Michael Jordan and Pippen. He left. He goes to the Lakers, has Kobe and Shaq, and then Kobe and Gasol. Right? Guy won 11 championships or whatever it was. So I think Missoula is now getting a lot more credit. I just think in the NBA, it's a players-driven league, so they're going to get the most credit, and they also get the most blame. I mean, look no further than James Harden last night. What, 7 points in a Game 7? Remember when he had 9 points in a Game 7 here in Boston a couple of years ago? Kind of a habit for James Harden. So I think he is, again, getting that credit. When I look at this Celtics-Knicks series, we had a caller ask about it earlier. Terp and I talked about this. Like, Porzingis, to me, like 34-4-3 the last time out against the Knicks. I don't think he's going to do that all the time in this series, but if you get, you know, 23 points a game ish or 18 points a game, and I'm saying ish because is Jaylen Brown much healthier than he was a few weeks ago? Can he put the foot to the gas a little bit more? Is Drew Holiday healthy and going to play every game in this series? So if you can get, you know, 18 ish points, 6-7 rebounds a game, and he'll have maybe 1 or 2 games where he really explodes, you'll win this series in 4 or 5 games. I still say 5. I know Terp said 4. I say 5. I think maybe the Knicks steal 1 at MSG. I think Celtics do win tomorrow night. But we're going to dive into this series a little bit more coming up. Got a couple other things I'd like to hit as well. Again, 617-779-7937. You want to talk Celtics. You want to talk Red Sox from today. You want to talk a little Patriots. If you're mad that Mike Sullivan got hired as the coach of the Rangers and wish the Bruins had hired him and you want to talk about that, you can do all that. We'll be right back to wrap up the show and take your texts and calls coming up.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate, whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family. Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Next. Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. And final segment of the show, 617-779-7937. Take your calls and texts on Celtics, Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, whatever you feel like wrapping up the show with. I started today's show talking about the Red Sox, a deeply frustrating loss for the Red Sox, 5-4 to the Minnesota Twins. Once again, a game Red Sox led. They're up 3-1 in the seventh inning, and they don't close the deal. Garrett Whitlock was on for his second inning of relief. Got Harrison Bader down 0-2 and then walked him. And then Vasquez singles. They both advanced on a Byron Buxton ground out. Ryan Jeffers singles. Boom, 3-3. And then in the eighth, Correa has a single. Bader doubles off the monster with two outs. Correa scores, 4-3. Then Trevor Larnach, RBI single, 5-3. Abreu did hit a solo homer in the bottom of the eighth to make it 5-4, and that was that. And this is just another game for the Red Sox, who sit at 18-18. Another game that they really should have won and found some annoying way to lose. And I know it's only May 4th, I get it, but again, this has been a theme. I mentioned earlier in the show, last year, just above 500 in April, losing record in May. This year, May 4th, 500. So it's something, you know, if you're a Red Sox fan, they went out and they got Bregman, they went out and they got Crochet. It was exciting. I was excited to start the year, right? They win on opening day in Texas. I was excited. They've played some really good baseball, like that Cardinals series to open Fenway Park this year was awesome. Right, that series, what, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, excuse me, against the White Sox, where they had the walk-off win on the Saturday. They played really good baseball in that series. And then they've had other series, like Toronto, that you're up 6-0, you lose. You know, Vlad Guerrero, the next night, first base is open, he hits a home run, you lose. Right, yesterday, lose, score 3 runs today. So it's just they've had a string of these annoying, frustrating losses, because this is a team that's 18-18 and should not be 18-18. So it's just, again, that's how we started the show, and kind of an annoyed note. And Red Sox have an off day tomorrow, and then you look at this, what's coming up in May. I mean, as the month goes along, they're going to have a series against the Braves, who I know the Braves have been inconsistent this year, but that's a really talented team. You're going to have a series against the Mets, which is the best team in baseball. You have a series against the Rangers coming up. Like, your schedule is going to get more difficult. Like, let's not forget, in April, you played the White Sox a bunch of times. You just played a Twins team that's not good, and you lost 2 out of 3. Like, so, I don't know. It's kind of a frustrating existence right now for the Red Sox. We did talk a bunch of Celtics with Justin Turpin as well, previewing the Knicks series. Really enjoyed Turp being on here. Let's actually quickly go to the phones. Mike in Connecticut wants to talk Red Sox. Mike, welcome into the program. What do you got?
How you doing, buddy? You know, it's the same thing. They're just a 500 team. They're terrible at home. Minnesota's a terrible team. And, you know, really, with Southside Chapman, I have no trust in Slayton. For some reason, Whitlock, you know, he's not pitching that good. The team needs a shakeup. They have to bring up a couple people and make a couple moves, or it's just going to be like the last 3 years. They're going to be a 500 team.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. And I said this in the first segment of the show. I'm kind of getting an eerie feeling that this Red Sox team is like the 2023 San Diego Padres. And I know this is not the Padres radio network, but just bear with me. That was a team loaded in talent, and they went 82-80, scored a bunch of runs, but they just couldn't find a way to win close games. I mean, right now, the Red Sox this year, too, I mentioned they have 18 losses. In games that they score less than 4 runs, including yesterday, 3-12 in games that they score fewer than 4 runs. They scored exactly 4 today. But fewer, so they can't win low-scoring games. And their bullpen, Whitlock had 6 consecutive shutout appearances, and then in his last 2, he's given up multiple runs. It's almost like you take a step forward and then a step back type thing. So I don't know. Frustrating existence. As I mentioned, we did talk Celtics. We have a producer, Tom Crisafulli, here with us. Tom, big Celtics guy, correct?
Love him.
Yeah. By the way, for those that don't know, Tom Crisafulli interviewed Devin McCourty at his college radio station a while back. So good job, Tom.
Thank you, John.
But, Tom, quick thoughts on the Celtics series from you?
I think it'll be really tough for them to sweep the Knicks just because it's tough to beat a team 8 consecutive times in a row. I think Madison Square Garden, they'll get one win. The Knicks will get one win in MSG with the crowd. Brunson will have a big game. Cat will have a big game. But I'm very confident in this series. The Knicks have been very fraudulent against actual competition. We saw 0-10 against the Thunder, Cavs, and Celtics, so I'm not worried.
Yeah, they do not have a signature win this year. And one other thing, and Turp and I didn't talk about this, but one other stat I wanted to mention as well. In the playoffs, so 16 playoff teams, I guess there's 20 if you include the play-in, the Knicks were 12th in defensive rebounds per game and 12th in second-chance points allowed per game in the playoffs. So they are not good on the defensive glass. They allow a bunch of second-chance points. They allow a bunch of offensive rebounds. Like, I think that's an area, and that's when, you know, when I asked Turp about the double bigs, and he doesn't necessarily think it'll be a double big series, but I could see Porzingis stacking up rebound numbers. I could see Tatum stacking up rebound numbers. Maybe even Holiday from the guard spot. Like, I that's an area that, especially if the Celtics get going and they aren't turning the ball over and they are out rebounding, especially on the offensive glass, because that was something they had a little bit of trouble with against Orlando. They gave up some offensive rebounds, right? There were some moments that was, it caused them more problems than it needed to. So, again, if they can take advantage of the Knicks' lack of defensive rebounding and they shoot better than they did against Orlando, that's where, again, I don't see this being a long series. I think it's going to be 5 games just because, again, I respect Terp saying 4. I just think Knicks maybe win 1 at MSG. I mean, Jalen Brunson has 7 career 40-point games in the playoffs. Does he have one game that he scores 40 or 45 points? Go back to last year against the Cavs, right? Celtics 1-5. They lost game 2 at home because Donovan Mitchell had, I think it was 45 points. Like, he was fantastic. Does Brunson have a game like that where he hits a couple big shots late, you know, the quote-unquote clutch player of the year? That's going to be fun, too, when Tatum has a better series than him. But is he going to have a game like that, I wonder, that gets the Knicks a win? And I think if you beat the Knicks in 5, I'm fine with that. I don't want it to go beyond 5 for obvious reasons, but you just had a physical series against Orlando. I think if you play Cleveland in that conference finals, that'll be at least a 6-game series, maybe 7. If you play OKC or Denver in that NBA finals, that's going to be at least a 6-game series. And that OKC-Denver series, by the way, that might be the real Western Conference finals. I think the winner of that series is probably going to go to the NBA finals, so even though it's a second-round matchup. But again, I think 5 games here for the Celtics. Keep an eye on the Knicks' defensive rebounding. I think that's an area where the Celtics can take advantage. I think the Celtics are going to be able to shoot a bunch more threes than they did against Orlando. Keep an eye on that. I mean, the Celtics shot 50% against the Knicks this year. They were just flat out better. Opening night, avalanche of points against the Knicks, blew them out the second time they played. The third time they played, beat them by 13, but it didn't even feel that close. And I know the last one was an overtime game. It was a 2-point game, but it was also the one game the Celtics had 15 turnovers, which was their most of the 4. I don't think they're going to do that a bunch. So Celtics in 5 is my prediction. Big thank you to all the callers and texters today after that Red Sox game and Celtics stuff as well. Huge thank you to Justin Turpin for coming in for a while. Big thank you, as always, to Tom Crisafulli. He does a great job producing for us. So if you don't know who he is, learn who he is. I'm John Lyons. I will be back on the air in a couple weeks here on WEEI. Until then, enjoy this Celtics playoff series. I think it's Celtics in five, and I hope it's the next step towards Banner 19.